listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts, Jim and Bobby Bell, for tonight.
And we are so delighted that you're with us again this week. We have a great show, and we kicked it off, of course, with music from the Hot Texas Swing Band, aptly called Hot Texas, provided by our good friend Alex Dormont and the band. Yeah. We love that music. So, Jim, who's our guest tonight?
Our guest tonight is Teddy Jones.
Wonderful. Do you want to hand me her book?
We got it.
And we're talking about Marva Cope, her new book. And I know that, Jim, you have an intro for Teddy.
We have a little beginning intro. Yes, we do. Teddy Jones writes fiction, both short stories and novels. She's had 5 novels and a collection of short stories published and collected a couple of prizes along the way. In 2014, Jackson's Pond, Texas, the novel, was a finalist in the Women's Writing the West Willa Award for Contemporary Fiction. Tonight, we're talking about her newest book, Marva Cope, the latest in her Jackson's Pond series.
Welcome, Teddy.
Hi there. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
For our viewers that happen to be watching this streaming live, you'll see a picture of Teddy in the upper right screen of your device you're watching on. Teddy, where are you calling from and what's happening in your part of the world?
I'm calling from a farm outside of Friona, Texas, which is in Palmer County, which is the southwesternmost county of the Texas Panhandle. About 30 miles from the New Mexico border. And what's happening here is that this is the season this year of thunderstorms, electrical thunderstorms. And we're on at least 3 occasions lately, we've been without power for hours because of a lightning strike at a transformer or one thing or another. And so we're that way again tonight. No, we have power right now, but we have the warning and the threat. And so that's why it's better that I speak on the phone than speak on the computer, which was the way we had planned it. But, you know, that's how you deal with life in the high plains.
That's right. That's exactly how you deal with it. Well, we are delighted to have you with us. And the book that we are talking about is Marva's Cope. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your background? You've done a lot of different things. Tell us a little bit more about Teddy Jones.
Well, I came from another small town. I was born in Wichita County, which is on the eastern edge of West Texas. Up near the Red River in a town called Iowa Park, Texas. And as I finished school there, the next thing to do was to, what I chose to do was to go to nursing school. And I became a registered nurse. And after various changes and things in life, I had moved from one nursing position to another, first being a registered nurse in hospital, then in a physician's office, then in graduate program to become a teacher of nurses, and then teaching at the University of Texas at Austin in the nursing school there, and then subsequently at the University of Colorado School of Nursing, where I was an assistant dean. And then I say recently, it's been 20 some odd years ago, I was the first dean for the new School of Nursing at Texas Tech in Lubbock. And so, in all of those places, I also taught nursing students. And then in 2000, 1993, I decided that I probably didn't want to be a nursing administrator in a college any longer. I'd done that for quite a few years. And so I went back to school and became a nurse practitioner, a family nurse practitioner. And I practiced in that role for a number of years and taught in the graduate program, in the nurse practitioner program at Texas Tech. And so then my husband and I decided to move to the farm, his family's farm, where his he had grown up out here in Freona. And so we both left our jobs at Texas Tech and came here, and he farms, and I have the opportunity now to do something I'd wanted to do for a number of years, but was busy doing other things, and that is to write fiction. And so that's how I came to write fiction, was I finally had the time and the opportunity to do it. And here I am.
And here you are.
Very good.
Do you want to...
How big is Freona? What's the population
there? Well, close to 4,000 people. I don't know where they all are. I think it doesn't look like it's that size. It's an agricultural-based community. There's feed yards and place that creates that cattle feed, and there are is a packing plant, and then there are lots of farms all around, and then of course are the usual things that you have in town where implement stores and you know that kind of thing, and we do have a grocery store, and but it's a typical small rural town. The railroad runs through it, and Burlington Northern runs through here, and so it's not isolated in that way. We're 35 something miles from Clovis, New Mexico, which is the next closest larger town.
It's close to the border.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. It really is close to the border.
And Amarillo is 75 miles, and Lubbock is 100.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so we're out here.
Okay, we're familiar with the bigger towns, Lubbock and Amarillo, and obviously Clovis. But when you get into smaller towns, I've heard of Freona, but I didn't know where it was and how big it was. As you and I talked the other night, I said it must be about 10,000 small towns in Texas.
Yeah, Texas has a lot of small towns.
That's right. Well, yeah, it is. It's full of small towns, and a lot of them have really interesting names. Freona is not particularly strange, but there are lots of names of towns that you wonder how they... There is a town called Uncertain. It's hardly a town anymore, but I found that because I was writing a story about something, and I found that over in East Texas, and I thought, that is a great name. I'm using it. So, Uncertain.
Don't you wonder
what the town fathers were thinking about when they named it?
They were uncertain. They couldn't make a decision, I'm guessing. In the book we'll be talking about, there are some references. We've got some scenes that have to do with ranching, with horses, a little bit even with rodeo. I'm guessing that is part of your background.
Well, I did not grow up on a farm, but I have had cousins that did, and I spent a lot of time out with them. And then had an uncle who was a cowboy and a stockman and owned horses, and he was averse to driving a tractor. But even it's necessary, even if what you do is ranch, you have to raise feed unless you want to spend all your money on buying feed. And so he had to do a little bit of farming, but he saw himself as a cowboy for all his life. And so I knew at that distance, but I didn't grow up in that particular direct. I was not a farm dweller myself, but, you know, again, it was a small town. And so you're close enough to know a lot of things about how it is to live that way. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once we got out here, I had the opportunity to learn a lot of things that I never had done before, which is great. We don't have horses. This is strictly a farm. And so we don't have horses, but, you know, there are lots of people who do, and there are people that's what they do. They're cowboys. And in fact, they have, even at the feed yards, they have people who are on horseback, even though they don't have to, you know, gather cattle from distant places in these contained feed yards. They still do their work on horseback. So it's, there are people all around here who are, quote, cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's, yeah. You know, it's kind of still a romantic idea to be a cowboy.
Sure. Yeah. Yes, that's understandable. It is. You have a question?
Well, I was just going to say, when did you first start writing?
Well, I began writing fiction in about 2000, right after we came out here, is when I actually started spending time focused on writing something that was fiction. That's what that was my goal, was to write fiction. I'd written a lot of other things that I had to learn to, I mean, that was, you know, writing is part of what you do in any educational enterprise. And so I spent a lot of time doing a lot of other writing. And then before we moved out here, I had begun writing a health promotion column for a farm magazine. And that was, a shift over into something that wasn't academic material. This was directed toward people who read the farm magazine. And so that was good practice for me. I got a lot of good feedback from the people who read that. And, actually wrote in letters to the editors that they enjoyed it. So that was encouraging. And then I began really focusing on trying to learn to write fiction. And I thought I could probably learn it on my own because, I've been to school a lot and I thought I could do that. But I realized at some point that I really, even though I could go to conferences and read all the right magazines and books, I needed a formal education in the craft of writing fiction. Mm-hmm. And so in 2010, I went back to school again and took a graduate degree in creative writing at Spalding University. And that was one of the best educational experiences I'd ever had. And so that was sort of when it all came together for me in terms of really feeling like I could say I am a writer, although I had had a couple of other things published. It was not until I really, it gelled for me. It came together after having that kind of experience. So that's how I sort of transitioned into doing that.
During that time, I was still
seeing patients part-time, too, until 2011, I think, was the last time I was seeing patients as a nurse practitioner.
The book we're going to talk about in a little greater detail in just a couple of moments, Marva Cope, is part of a series, the Jackson's Pond series. Tell us how that series got, did you know from book one it would be a series? How did that series kind of get started?
I didn't have a clue. When I was in that graduate program that I mentioned over at Spalding, one of the things, you had a different mentor each semester. You had four semesters of intense work with four different people. And I was fortunate enough to be able to negotiate the possibility of, instead of switching and doing just a series of short stories in the work that you had to produce, you had to produce new work. I can't remember how many times each semester, and then you sent it in and they critiqued it, sent it right back. You revised and did the whole thing. And so a lot of people, when they finished the program, what they had is their thesis project was a collection of short stories. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be writing all these things, and why not make them stick together? And so I negotiated that, could I write something that would end up being a novel? That's what I was aiming for. And so they each one agreed that kept on doing it. And so I ended up with Jackson's Pond as my thesis novel. And so I thought, well, the next thing is to try to get this published. And no, I had not any idea that was going to be one of X number. It was, I thought, a one-off. And even after it was published, and it was selected as a finalist in the Willow contest, I was asked by people, a variety of people, including the agent who had found me. And finally, I had searched and searched for an agent. It was certainly not something that was easy. But this person found me at the Women Writing the West and asked, did I have representation? And I said, well, no. And it was like, and what is your name? And I'm taking you home with me. This is how I felt. You know, it's like, it's wonderful. Somebody wants to be my agent. Anyway, I was asked, what happened to these people next? And I don't really know. I'd have to think about that. But, well, and so the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, of course, it makes perfect sense. You don't have to reinvent the place. You have people that the characters are already known, or some of them are. And so why not try it? And so that's how I began to turn it into a series.
That's wonderful. We are talking with author Teddy Jones about, we're going to get in greater detail now in a moment with her newest title, Marva Cope. But we're going to take a very short break. We're going to show you where you can pick up Teddy's books. And when we come back, it'll be all about Marva. Stay tuned.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com. Find books and CDs on the menu. Choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Tonight's special guest, Teddy Jones.
We both have dry voices.
Teddy's calling in from Texas tonight with a lot of bad weather. She's had 3 inches of rain already, hoping that the communications will stay open. We have a beautiful picture of her up in the corner of the screen. You're going to hear her, but you're not going to see her lips move.
She's on the back of the book as well. And we're in New Mexico where it's dry, dry, dry. So excuse us if we sound a little garbly tonight. So now we want to get into this newest book of yours, Teddy. Tell us a little bit about the book, Marva Cope.
Okay, Marva Cope is the fourth book in the series. Heretofore, the focal character in each of the three previous novels has been one of the members of the Jackson family. The Jackson family is the family for whom the pond on their ranch, Jackson's Ranch, Jackson's Pond, is the source of the name for the town, which is like 10 miles away. And because it's all connected there. Well, so we had the first one was a family saga, basically orienting people to the family. And Willa is the matriarch of that family. And she was a focal character in the first novel. The second novel was primarily about her granddaughter, Claire, and her family. And then the third was about her daughter, Melanie Jackson Banks. And so with number four, we have the same town and many of the same characters, but we have a stranger who came to town, and that's Marva Cope. Marva arrived in Jackson's Pond in 2017. She's the new postmaster in town. And she has moved in with her aunt, Violet. They haven't seen one another in years, but whenever Marva found out she was going to take the position there, it was suggested to her that she might look up her aunt who's living there, who had been in the public school system there for years, and now she's retired, and she's 79, her aunt is, and they've hit it off really well. So Marva has arrived there in June of 2017, and the book opens in October of that year. And Marva's 55 at the time that the book opens. Let's see, what else? It's basically a story about a woman reinventing herself, and the reader has enough of the information about her previous life to form opinions about how Marva came to be the way she was. And the way she is in 2017 is someone who's wondering how it is she's found herself unattached to almost everyone except her daughters, whom she has raised alone. And that she has basically a sense that she has no friends, and she has these, also the feeling she has gaps in her life. And for a long time, as I was writing this, I thought this was a book about memory. But as it continued, as I wrote, I realized it was actually about friendship and or the lack of it. And so that's the basic elements of the story. Maybe I should stop and let you ask me if there's a question you might have.
Oh, no,
I'll keep, you know, keep right on talking. I'll tell you the whole thing.
Well, she's pretty resourceful woman.
Yeah, she's resourceful.
And even as a young child and teenager, she actually shows these traits. But, you know, in the book, a double tragedy happens, and it kind of sets her life spinning. And she's actually, to me, she had a pretty normal, to some respect, family life. Her mother was a little bit of a nitpicker, but
mom.
But after the tragedy, and her relationship with her mom kind of deteriorated, mm-hmm. and she kind of, I guess she was kind of, she felt she was alone, and she kind of struck off on a. Sort of a series of ventures with a boyfriend. Would you like care to comment on that at all? But I don't want to have any spoiler words.
So, I'm just going to jump in for a moment and say that Marva, I really like her. Maybe because a woman to woman, I really like her. And she starts off with a dear brother. And when Jim is mentioning a tragedy, she's got that brother she looks up to. And I think all of us that are blessed to have a sibling we look up to understand that very special relationship, or we're the older one and we know that our younger one looks up to us. Her brother, Chance, will you just take a moment and talk a little bit about Chance?
Well, Chance was they lived in a real town here in Texas called Dimmitt, which is 25 miles from here. I just chose it because of the name. But they lived in a small town, and they lived on a farm, and Chance and Marva are the only two children in the family. And it's a dry land farm, except for one field that can be irrigated. And her dad basically grown cotton, and that's not an easy crop to grow. And this was back in 1975. And so they... if you have dry years and all bad weather or the combination and things don't go right, you lose money, and you lose a lot of money. And so they'd had a couple of bad years in a row. And so it was a hard time for the family. But at this point, Chance is in high school, and Marva is in junior high, and there's 4 years difference in their age. And he is a star athlete. And so she is just idolizes him, and she learns from him. He teaches her how to be a sprinter, and because she's thinking maybe she wants to go play basketball, or maybe she'd run track when she gets in high school. Well, she's in the eighth grade now. In the story, when it begins with when we go back to 1975, and so she just, you know, life is good, and Chance is now going to get his driver's license, and so that's even better. And because then he's promised her that they'll actually be able to go, you know, they'll go to Amarillo and, you know, cruise a little and that kind of thing, which is, you know, terribly exciting to a teenager, and especially if you get to go with your big brother. And so that's why Chance was the only person in the family she really was tied to was her brother. She was so much, and he had always took care of her. She hung out with him, and he didn't act like she was a pest. He actually treated her well. And so as far as she was concerned, he was the very best person in the world. And so that's how their relationship was before the tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a friend. He, because I think you're right, it is a discovery of friendship through the book. And Marva meets some different people along the way that consider her a friend, and then they don't consider her a friend. And she's kind of oblivious to some of it because she's just has to take care of herself. And she's not comfortable asking for help. In fact, I think it doesn't even occur to her necessarily to reach out and ask for help. So we get to follow through her life. And I think most all readers will find segments of her life that we can definitely relate to, especially when it comes to family and friend relationships. You do, as an author, you give us two time periods, which you've just touched on. We get to see Martha young and in her family relationships, and then we see her older as she moves in with her Aunt Violet. How did you decide to do a kind of flashback, you know, the past and the present, and tie them together? How'd you decide that?
Not easily. I started it, you know, I was going to tell it straight through from when she was young and just go straight through and not even hint at where she was, and to have it told completely chronologically. And I took it to workshop. I go once a year to a workshop of people that I have worked with and for a long, long time, many years, like 10 or 12 years now. And everybody's very candid and quite helpful. And of course, the teacher is the most, as far as I'm concerned, he's the one whose word is, if he says, maybe you ought to do this, he never says, do it. It's like, maybe you ought to think about this. Well, he said something to the effect, maybe I'll think about this. And so maybe I'll think about whether I really wanted to begin when she was a youngster or whether I wanted to begin at a different point in her life and go back. And so that was what I did when I revised it. And it made a big difference because the reader was able to be arrested with the notion of who she is when she arrives in Jackson's Pond. And what's there, even without knowing any of her backstory, they can see how she's there and she's a stranger in town and all of that. And so right there, that's enough difficulty for a lot of people to begin a life again at age 55. But that was something that came only when I did revision. And I believe to the core that revision is the heart of doing any good writing. I can do draft after draft, but until I've done enough revising and had enough criticism from people whose opinion I value, it's not ready. And so that's how it happened. It was the product of a lot of work, rewriting. And so that's how it came to be.
Another element that I think we both enjoyed, the introduction throughout the book of little articles that are appearing in the Jackson's Pond Leader, right?
Yeah.
And so we don't really get those until we're into her life in Jackson's Pond. And you shared a little earlier about having written for a local kind of a magazine, and I thought, so you have a little experience writing these types of little news bits, don't you?
Right. Yes, and I've used that in each one of the Jackson's Pond books, and I think it offers a way to provide the reader context that they would struggle with if it were in within the chapter, and it would be there'd have to be these long segments of strictly narrative describing things, whereas you can get enough context from a news article followed by another news article, you know, prior to each chapter. And so you come to have a picture of the town without having to labor through it when you're trying to deal with the story of a person or a family. And so that's why I've done it that way in these books. I've done other things without that, but I like them as a sort of feature. And I had another teacher one time, and he made the comment, and I've remembered it, was you need to teach your reader how to read your work. And so they need a reader becomes accustomed to the way, if they continue to read your work, they do it because, and they become accustomed to what to expect from you as a writer. And so having something that is, oh yeah, she's doing that again, that kind of a feature, I think, makes a difference to people. They're familiar with that. They also expect from me, I think, that my prose is direct, that I don't try to star the writer. I try to star the characters. I don't try to... some people enjoy long, flowery segments of narrative, which I think, to me, feel like the writer's showing off. And, you know, I think that it's my perspective is it's more important to make the characters and their trials and tribulations and all the things that are going on in their lives the focal point rather than the skill of the writer.
I noticed that to be able to tell a good story without that. Yeah, we noticed that each chapter starts with a chapter number, of course, but then
we have a date and a location.
A date and a location.
And we get along mm-hmm. in the book. We finish each chapter with something from the leader.
Right.
From the newspaper itself.
Yeah, and because we're moving back through time periods, it's helpful. Yeah. As a reader we're back. Oh, we're here now. Oh, we're here now. Okay. You know, we can follow what's happening. Let's see.
It helps me if I'm a reader. When I'm a reader, it helps me to be oriented. And so I think, well, why not do for the people who read my things what I would like to have this as a reader. So, you know, sure. I understand that other people don't choose to do that, but that, if that's what I want as a reader, then I want to offer it to the reader, something that orients them to time and place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, when Marva and Violet, her aunt Violet, get together and Marva, they make an arrangement. It's a business arrangement, but of course it's also family moving in. The first thing that Violet does is what? Get out the Scrabble board. So do you play Scrabble?
Oh, I love Scrabble, and it's been a thing that I've done for as long as I can remember. My mother and I played a lot of Scrabble. My brothers and I played Scrabble, and my own daughter and son played Scrabble with me. Of course, I may have been a matter of coercion, but they seem to enjoy it too. So yes, Scrabble is something I really enjoyed. And that and working crossword puzzles. So it's fun. And so I thought, why not put it in there? Yeah.
You know, we're going to be talking about Violet here, Aunt Violet. You know, she's really an interesting character. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of talk about her just for a moment or two?
We like her. Yeah.
Well, Violet is, to some extent, a contemporary of Willa, and they're friends. And she has been a school teacher and has taught in several different places, but has come back and after she, later in her life as a teacher, she taught there. And then when the school district consolidated the high school, sent the high school students all over to the town 30 miles away because it was too small to have the high school there in Jackson's Pond any longer at the time. So she, when she retired, she stayed there, and so she's lived there for some time, and she has a lot of friends. She plays cards every week, and she keeps up, and she attends the Methodist Church, and she's the kind of person who knows how to make friends. Mm-hmm. And among her friends, I think Willa is probably the best or one of the best in terms of the degree to which she's close to her, and they've known each other forever, and so that makes a big difference. And Violet never married. She had a couple of near misses, and she enjoys telling a good story. And so they, at some point, she has an opportunity. They tell stories about proposals they nearly accepted, and whether she was quick to tell them about not giving back the rings. And so, you know, she's quite a character. She also taught drama as well as English, and so she can embellish a story and do a good job of it. So Mm-hmm. I like her.
There's a scene with, I liked every scene with Violet. There's a scene with Marva and Violet and Stacy, who's a friend, becoming more and more of a friend of Marva's. And they're all talking about that they're all single. And they're, you know, it's three ladies talking about their life. It's not quite like the Golden Girls and that television show, but those three ladies together are a lot of fun. You know, the author, did they surprise you at all? Did you know that, you know, Stacy wasn't going to have a husband, or did she just tell you, no, I'm single?
This was not planned. It wasn't planned. It just happened. I mean, I don't outline what I write when it's fiction. I have to watch what happens. I have to ask myself, well, what if? And I do that over and over and over during the development of it. I start with a character is my central character for the story. And no, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that Stacy had been tried to be a friend when they were in college, and she was as close to being a friend as anyone she had when she was in college. But it became clear to me as time went on that we needed to see, once I discovered that's what the story was about, was friendship, not memory. I thought, well, she's got to find some friends then. And so Stacy came back to my mind, and I thought, okay, then we're going to have to build Stacy. And so she had reason to be who she was, you know, as her story emerged. But it just sort of made sense to me. And that, I think, was what, you know, it made sense. And so she became who she was. But I didn't have her planned from the beginning, no. I'm sorry to say, I'm not. And I know people who write fiction who actually outline, they know where they're going. They write, you know, they know exactly where they're going. I don't. Mm-hmm. And so,
there's another friend that we both enjoyed, and that's Bullet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I have a fondness for animals, dogs in particular. And so most everything I write, if it makes sense to have a dog, there'll be at least one. And Bullet was there for her at the right time, and he was there waiting when they went to that ranch up there. In a way, he had been left behind by the previous owners. He was there when the people who were there before Marva and Cutter were, and he decided she was his person. Now, to some extent, the person who feeds them is the one that they'll take to the most immediately. But he was special, and he seemed like some animals that we've had, and so, you know, it made me feel good to write about him.
Yeah,
and they'll always, if there's a chance, I'll have a dog in the story just because. And another reason, not just because I like dogs, but you can tell a lot about a person, about the characters, and the way they treat animals. Cutter, I knew it, you know, no matter how he fouled up, he treated animals well. And he was good in that way. And that's something that I think is true about people, who you can learn something about the people by how they treat animals and how animals will interact with them. And so I like to have that opportunity to use that relationship between the humans and the animals to, mm-hmm. and, you know, mm-hmm. the vet that she met there in he was a nice young man, and
he was a nice young man. I kind of thought maybe that, you know, there'd be something there, but
she didn't stick around though.
No, she but he took. I was so happy that Bullet was able to find a new home, because I have read books where that doesn't always happen with that loved animal. Sometimes the animal, you know, gives their life, sacrifices their life for the main character. Uh-huh. You write us into a situation that is gripping. And I kept thinking to myself, oh, I don't know, is Bullet going to make it out of this or not?
I don't want to kill him off, no. Oh, no, that would have hurt me. That would have been hard for me to do. I would have more trouble killing him than some other some human, I think, because he was so true to her. He was so protective, and it was just, I could see him in my mind real easily.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, you write him as though you have seen him. You've shared him from your mind with ours. We are going to take one more very short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Marva Cope, and we're going to find out a little bit more about Teddy's writing process and her publishing process. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer, Jim and Bobby Bell. Special guest tonight, Teddy Jones, and her book, Marva Cope.
Marva Cope.
Teddy's calling in from Texas. A lot of bad weather down there, and we got a nice, beautiful picture of her up in the right-hand corner of our screen.
We'll wait.
But she's going to be on the phone, and you won't see a lot of animation there, okay? Yeah, character you want to...
Well, before we move into a little bit of her writing process, would you tell us a little bit about Chick?
Oh, well, he could be a stereotype if I let him, but he's actually he's someone who's been living there in Jackson's Pond forever, except when he went away to college, and he's like many in small towns, you have to often have more than one enterprise in order to make it well. He has some cattle out on the place where he lives. He has a donkey. And so that's something about him and his animals. And so I wanted to get in that perspective. That he also secretly does good things for the town, sort of a civic concerns, and I say secretly because he doesn't necessarily want to be applauded for what he does for as good works, but he makes contributions or sees that the city gets a good deal on land. He's his education is to be a land appraiser and a real estate person, and so that in a small town is not a full time. Neither of those separately is a full time job. So he combines all those things. Mm-hmm. And then he's also got classmates with he went to school with, and so they still talk to each other just the way they did when they were in high school. The kind of things where they, if put this in quote, mess with one another, like guys will do. And so I could see him because I know people like that, that have been where they are, and they are sort of retainers in terms of keeping the town alive. And they help each other out, and they help people out. He's just, he's good-hearted. He's good-hearted.
He's a
widower. He had a wife that was his first wife, and he was absolutely devastated by the fact that she died young. Then he made a mistake and married a second person that he got rid of as soon as he realized what a mistake it was, that she was a person who constantly needed drama. And that it was really not a matter of love. He was lonesome. And so now, again, he's single and has been for some years. I think three, as a matter of fact. I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. But he is he's known to people in town. And when Marva comes, he just likes to find out about, new people in town. He didn't have any particular agenda whenever she arrived, but he did like to, that it's not uncommon for men in a town, particularly women, have their own gathering ways, but men, they have place to drink coffee at the bank, and they have a domino game that happens every afternoon over at the gym, at the elevator or the gym, those kind of things. Well, he makes the rounds like that because he likes to have a lot of information about what's going on and what's about to happen. And so that's how he gets involved.
He's we like him a lot. I'm looking at the clock and all of a sudden we are so short of time, Teddy. The time is just flowing. Why don't you, let's see. First off, where can people find you, follow you, find out your schedule?
Okay, I have a website. It's tjoneswrites.net. tjoneswrites.net. That's the website. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram. Just check for my name, and you'll find me on either of those. I prefer Facebook just because it works better. But I'm on both. And so that's where you can keep up with me. And,
do you have a tip for writers you'd like to leave us with?
Yes. Don't ever quit. Just keep writing.
Just keep writing. Just keep writing. And what do you have coming up next?
Well, I have a novel set. It's not a Jackson's Pond novel. It's one I wrote sometime back, and I've rewritten it. I did a lot of research, had a grant to do the historical research, and it's set in 1929 in Borger, Texas, which is up in the top, above Amarillo in the Panhandle. It was an oil field boom town at that time. It was during Prohibition. It was a rowdy place. And this woman who's moved there after her mother died is the sense of character. And she not only has the difficulties of operating a boarding house, not a rooming house, but a boarding house where she supplies three meals a day to her regular diners 7 days a week, and she's doing it alone. And so she's got all of that difficulty, plus dealing with her grief over her mother's death and trying to understand her family, because her family has no men in it. Everybody didn't have a father, and none of her five aunts had anybody besides daughters, no sons. None of them had a son. And she really never had asked her mother and was sorry that she hadn't. So as she's unpacking all of her mother's things that she's brought with her to Borger, she begins to learn about this family, this strange family that she's a part of.
Okay. And so will you let us know when that book is out, Teddy?
I certainly will.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Keep your fingers crossed that someone wants it.
Oh, that's bound to happen. We really thank you for being with us. We've been chatting with Teddy Jones, author of Marva Cope, and we are going to tell you a little bit about next week. Teddy, thank you so much for being with us. Next week, our guest is Bob Brill, good friend Bob Brill, and we're going to be talking about his Lancer Hero of the West series. We've got, you know, like six books we can hold up to the camera here, and another standalone book, The Tattoo Murder. So do tune in next week for Bob Brill. Let's see. Do you have a quote?
We have a quote. This is from Marva Cope, and it's from the main character. She's searching for a place to call home and what it takes to be a friend. She has this thought. I want to be home. I think that means fitting in. That probably means having friends. Well, Violet and I are becoming friends. Then something she said. Trusting a person is part of what makes them more than an acquaintance.
Thank your friends this week. And thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. And I'm so happy to have been invited. I appreciate it.
It's always a great day out west.
See you next week.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.